If there's one thing everyone can agree on, it's that finances can be confusing, especially when you're trying to make sure your career, family life, and everything in between is taken care of. Trust me, I'm right there with you. Whether you're a seasoned investor, a budgeting newbie, or just someone looking to supercharge your financial future in about 15 minutes, this is for you. If you're ready to make your money work harder for you, and if you're ready to spark true financial independence, then you've come to the right place. I'm Teresa Arago, and this is Talking Sense. Money can be confusing, and as a matter of fact, it's the whole point in why we started this show was to help you guys break down and understand money concepts. And today's episode, we're going to revisit kind of topic of like just answering questions people have asked on our various platforms. I've got Chad Roller here from our Conway office. He and I are partners, work together on a lot of things together. So I felt like it would be good for you to be here for this because I know you bring a wealth of knowledge. So we're going to dive right in to the first question. This listener said, should I start my 401k in a Roth or pre-tax? My employer offers both. I make about $95,000 if that makes any impact on which to choose. So we get this one a lot. And it's one of those questions that there's not necessarily a wrong answer, but there are some things to consider.
Yeah. And so there are some variables here. Obviously, you know, are you single, married? What are their options? What's your total income as a household? So let's just start, though, with the first part of the question. Should I start my 401k in a Roth or pre-tax? So let's define those two things first. I think that'd be good to start with. So obviously the 401k, that's a company sponsored plan where I'm going to make a contribution and get a match from the employer. And there's basically two types here that we're dealing with is the Roth or the pre-tax. So define those a little bit for us. That way we can...
Just like with IRAs, there's a Roth option and there's a pre-tax option. The Roth option uses after-tax dollars. So it's not going to lower your taxable income when you get ready to file your taxes. But if you hang on to it and then retire later, not only what you put into it, but any gains that it has earned are all tax-free when you're ready to use them in retirement. So that's the benefit of the Roth is later on you get tax-free income. The pre-tax option lowers your taxable income now. So if you tend to have to pay taxes a lot, then that's something to consider because the pre-tax option will lower your taxable income for the year. But later on when you're ready to retire, you are going to pay taxes on not just what you put in, but also the gains. So it's all about how you want to take the money out later and how you're taking the money now.
Yeah. So in this scenario, we've got $95,000 in income. If I put $5,000 towards the pre-tax side, now it's as if I made $90,000 to the IRS for my taxable income.
Correct.
If you put $5,000 towards the Roth, it's still as if you made $95,000. So just kind of wanted to clarify that before we moved on so we can kind of help define some of these terms that we're using.
Yes. And one reason you might use the Roth, even if the tax, you know, you need the tax benefits of the pre-tax portion would be if you're not eligible for a Roth IRA. So if you make too much to be eligible for a Roth IRA, using the Roth option inside your employer plan may make sense if building some Roth money is important to you.
Yep. So the employer match is always going to be pre-tax.
Correct.
So there's no control over that one. But you have the option to go pre-tax or Roth on your portions. I would say that on as a younger individual, if this is a younger individual, I would say making $95,000, if you're not paying a whole lot in taxes at the end of the year, the Roth is would be the option to go with and receive those tax benefits down the road instead of right now.
Yes. Even if you're 10, 15 years out from retirement, if you tend to get a refund, the Roth option makes a ton of sense because it only has to exist for five for you to get the tax-free portion later. So, you know, you want to give it some time to grow. That's why I said 10 to 15. You know, if you can afford to do it, that Roth option is beautiful in retirement for, you know, think about it this way. If I take a dollar out of my employer plan in retirement and it's pre-tax, I'm really walking away with about 70 cents. Whereas with the Roth, I'm walking away with that whole dollar. But if you tend to owe a lot in taxes every year and you're getting eaten alive by taxes, that pre-tax option is going to help you the most.
Yeah, and there's not very many things that we can do in life where we have gains and not be taxed on, right?
Correct.
So this is
free money.
Yeah, this is a huge opportunity for those to be able to have access to that Roth. But if you are getting killed on taxes, maybe your spouse, you're making $95,000 and your spouse has a much higher income and you guys are paying in a lot of taxes, it may be best to lower that taxable income with those pre-tax dollars.
And often what we talk about with clients is a blended approach. You know, take some of it in pre-tax to get you where you need to be for taxes, and then the rest do the Roth. So you don't have to just pick one or the other. You can often pick a combination. Another misconception is some people think they have to use the pre-tax for the portion that's getting matched, and that's not true. You can go, most employers will match even the Roth contributions that you're making up to their limit. So don't feel like you have to choose pre-tax to get the match. The match portion will be pre-tax, but you have some flexibility there. Any other thoughts on that question before we move on?
I don't think so. I think we covered it.
All right. Why don't you ask the second question?
So I'm investing 25% into my 401k and about 4% to my HSA. What benefits am I missing by skipping out on the individual IRA? I don't know if I'd invest automatic the money in my account, if it would make any difference.
Okay.
Obviously, 25% to the 401k.
Kudos to them.
Yes.
Let's start there. That is fantastic to be doing, you know, while you're younger. To have that high of a savings rate is really solid.
Yeah. And then also taking care of that HSA, you know, 4% mm-hmm. to that HSA. And so just touch real quick on that HSA so everyone kind of understands what that 4% do.
So if you have an employer that has a high deductible in the health insurance, usually there'll be a HSA or health savings account that they will offer. Usually they'll put a little bit in there if they're a larger employer, but you have the ability to put money in there to help offset some of the medical expenses. You're putting money in pre-tax, and if you use it for qualified expenses, it goes out pre-tax. You don't owe any taxes on it. So it's a really great tool. You know, if I can use pre-tax money to pay my medical bills, it's going to save me money. But the other thing too is it's portable. So it goes with you into retirement. You don't have to use it or lose it like you do with a flexible spending account. And so there's a lot of potential to use it for retirement expenses when it comes to your healthcare as well. So it's a great tool, and I'm glad that you're using it. But, you know, the thing that I saw here that kind of stuck out for me was, I don't know if I'd invest if it wasn't automatic. So if the money hits my bank, I'm probably going to spend it. So if the ease of the employer plan keeps you on track, it may be the best place to stay, especially if you have access to Roth options within it. You know, or you have flexible investment options. Now, if you have a really limited option inside the employer plan, that may be a reason to prioritize some IRA options as well.
Yeah, and I think also looking at this from a household standpoint, what are my spouse's options for retirement?
Mm-hmm.
Do they have access to a retirement plan? Maybe they need to be the one using the IRA. But as far as if you're just missing out on something for utilizing the IRA, there are certain income limits as to whether or not the traditional IRA is going to be actually deductible for you.
Mm-hmm.
And if you make too much, can you even contribute to the Roth? So there's a lot more to be unpacked really for narrowing down, am I missing out on something,
mm-hmm.
potentially missing out on something, maybe tax deductions, or being able to utilize Roth if they didn't have access to the Roth inside the 401k.
And assuming that you qualify to make IRA contributions, whether it's Roth or traditional, there are a couple things to consider there. You know, one is the costs are higher in an IRA than it is inside your employer plan. That's we're not gonna hide behind that. But you do have open architecture. You have the ability to invest in just about anything inside of an IRA. So there is flexibility. So there's a benefit to it as well. But if the systemization is really important and you say, well, if it hits my bank, I don't know what's going to happen, you can set up systematic contributions too. We have tons of clients who their paycheck hits on the first, their contribution comes out on the second. So they don't have time to just kind of let that fall into the budget. And it gets automatically invested. It's automatically in the account every month. So you can do some systematization even with an IRA if that is the concern. But we always encourage clients and prospects to use the IRA in the mix of their strategy to provide diversification, especially when their employer plan has very limited options. That's really where it shines, in my opinion.
Right. And maybe just having the access, you know, outside of some flexibility, some more long-term planning, and maybe you need to do more into some retirement plans, then that gives you another option, the IRA option. But as far as missing out on something, I think that's more going back to narrowing down, is there an advantage tax-wise
mm-hmm.
to take more lower taxable income or utilizing the Roth IRA?
Yeah, the only missed opportunity is that you could possibly benefit from increasing the HSA. When I was looking at this question, really 4% to the HSA, depending on your salary, there's a lot of pieces we don't have here. You know, if you pay, you know, if your family's deductible is $3,000 to $5,000 a year, then you need to have that much in that HSA as quickly as possible. So, you know, maybe the better thing for you to focus on, if you're on track for retirement, which I don't know, you know, we don't have all the pieces here. If you're already on track, you've already met with your advisor and you know you're doing well there, maybe putting aside some pre-tax dollars in your HSA for qualified expenses might actually be the opportunity for you that you're missing out on.
So the third question, how should a 21-year-old get started investing and managing risk? Vanguard rates S&P ETFs as the most risky. Should I look at a safer investment like bonds?
Gotta go with first the disclosures. No investment is truly safe. There's risks with everything, even cash. You have inflation risk. You lose buying power if you're not gaining money. There is risk with all investing. No past performance is indicative of future performance. You know, there's all those things and nothing guarantees success. But investing over time is a process of taking measured risks. There has to be some measured risk. I think sometimes people just go, all risk is bad. But that's not true, because without some risk, you have no chance of gain.
Yeah. So let's talk about just the fundamentals between the S&P, what they're saying here, the S&P ETFs versus bonds. So what we're doing here is we're looking at the S&P 500. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so that would be investing in those stocks. So those 500 companies, you're investing in that stock. So the difference, just the fundamental difference there, is that I'm investing in that company versus I'm investing in that company's debt, right? So the company has the ability to issue stock ownership, or they have the ability to issue a bond, which is saying, I'm not going to give ownership, but I'm going to issue these bonds for return. I'm going to pay an interest rate for borrowing your money. Right?
It's like a loan.
Yeah.
It's just a very convoluted loan.
So obviously the risk is different, right? I'm investing in the maybe the progress of the, you know, the gains of the company and how they're going to do in the future versus just investing in their debt. So are they able to pay back their debt and the monies that they borrow? So we're kind of dealing with two different things here. And that's why, you know, one is maybe considered safer than the others, because we're investing in that company, that stock, versus investing in their debt. Now, at 21, we would say they have a long time to retirement. So utilizing that stock portfolio, that S&P 500, historically, those gains are going to outperform those bonds, obviously, because you're going to participate in the gains of those stocks versus just a flat interest rate or coupon on their debt.
And I think, too, with ETFs and mutual funds, there is some level of diversification that comes with that. A lot of mutual funds, let's talk about a growth mutual fund, not necessarily an S&P one, but a growth mutual fund, it might have 150 different companies in there represented in what makes up that mutual fund. And one of the ways I explain this is, you know, if you were to go to Little Rock, which is where we're from here in this area, and you go to one of the tall buildings and you're going to take an elevator, and on the left elevator, you see that it's got one cable that holds it up, that takes it up and down. The one on the right has a number of cables. Okay. We would all agree that the one with the single cable is going to move faster, but would we be willing to take that risk that if that cable fails, the whole thing's coming down? That would be like an individual stock. If I bought stock in Apple, I am rising and falling with the company of Apple. If I bought a mutual fund or that elevator that has several cables, and one of those companies or one of those cables breaks, I have the others in there that can shore up my performance or keep me from falling to the bottom. You know, if you have a growth stock mutual fund with 150 different companies, competitors are going to be in there. So if Apple's having a bad year, someone else is having a good year. That's why, you know, we encourage people a lot of times to go with a mutual fund or an ETF over a stock when it comes to trying to balance out risk, have measured risk, because it allows you to benefit from that spreading out. You know, we're not just in one company, we're spreading that out. So that's one way to handle that risk without being scared to take any risk at all.
Yeah. And I think along these lines, I'm getting started investing. We need to know what these dollars are for.
Yes.
And that would be a very good start to say, are these dollars, am I investing so I can buy a house in a couple years, or am I investing for retirement? So obviously we would want to know more to the story, and you need to think about, when am I going to utilize these dollars? How am I going to invest those? So if you've got a long-term time frame, then obviously the historical growth of the S&P on those ETFs are going to outperform that bond. But if it's short-term money that you're saying, hey, I have this investment, I just want to start investing, and I have a short-term need for this money, then bonds may be the better fit for a 21-year-old that just says, hey, I'm not ready to employ this, you know, purchase a house or purchase, you know, invest in a business or something like that. I just need more of a steady return until I need these dollars in the short term. That bond portfolio may be the better option.
I think the key is, as you mentioned, understanding the purpose of the investment itself. So it's time for our 2 cents. Chad, I'll let you go first.
So there's a lot of questions, and we always say that there's no dumb questions. So number one, we want to hear your questions. I think if we're not, if you're not utilizing this for your education and there's something you need to know, that we are always available. You know, we, that's why we offer, you know, free consultations for the very first time. We have many you know, ways to ask those questions to us. So if you've got questions out there, then we want to go through those with you and help you succeed and make sure you understand what you're doing.
And, you know, generic rules are moderately helpful, certainly. But the best thing to do is get advice that is clear to your specific circumstances to get clear answers to your questions. And, you know, sound financial decisions start with a sound financial education. We have lots of tools, as Chad mentioned, that could be useful to you. If you'd like more, go to our website, getreadyforthefuture.com. But thank you so much for joining us today. We hope you've learned something from this content. If you like what you heard, make sure you subscribe and leave us a review. Thanks for listening to Talking Sense. And if you like what you hear, make sure and subscribe to the podcast to get all the newest episodes. The Jim Wolf team is available to you 24/7 at info@getreadyforthefuture.com or by calling our offices at 866-653-PLAN. That's 866-653-7526. And while we like to have fun here, we're also financial advisors, and that means disclosures. You should personally consult a financial advisor before making any investment, and no strategy can assure success. Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC. Investment advice offered through Independent Advisor Alliance. Independent Advisor Alliance and Jim Wolf Financial Advisors are separate entities from LPL Financial.